This is Rob Pincus, and welcome to the Rob Pincus Podcast.
The Rob Pincus Podcast is brought to you by the Personal Defense Network. The Personal Defense Network is the leading destination of high-quality online personal defense video content and a no-nonsense gathering place for those serious about arming themselves for defense in every aspect of their lives. To learn more, visit www.personaldefensenetwork.com. Now, here's Rob.
Welcome to this episode of the Rob Pincus Podcast. On the Rob Pincus Podcast, we try to bring you important, or at least personally valuable, information in two areas. One is training, personal defense training and preparation, the being more ready to protect yourself or those that you care about stuff, and then also on the topic of gun rights or gun-related politics. And again, this is an area where we want you to be better prepared to not only exercise your rights responsibly, but also defend those rights for yourself and others. So we're talking about being free, and then also being free to be as ready as possible to stay free with the personal defense stuff. And that personal defense stuff is brought to you in our training segment by Personal Defense Network. PersonalDefenseNetwork.com is where you can go to learn all kinds of things about how to be better prepared to defend yourself or others when you need to. Of course, we have the firearm stuff. We've also got the emergency medicine stuff. But we have things like fitness, home security, and we also have conceptual videos and content, including articles and distance education classes that will help you understand how to better train and or practice the things you learn from our subject matter experts. And unlike the Rob Pincus Podcast, Personal Defense Network is a lot more than just Rob Pincus. You're going to hear from some of the best experts in a wide variety of areas, including unarmed defense, again, the medical information, the fitness information, interacting with law enforcement while armed, not only from people who teach this stuff, but also from the law enforcement officers you might be interacting with, as well as all of the tools, the knives, the shotguns, the pistols, the rifles, reviews of the gear, as well as best practices for the use and training of your techniques with that gear as well. Again, all at personaldefensenetwork.com. Now, not all of it is free, but a lot of it is. You can sign up for the free newsletter and get alerted to new videos being released, as well as live and interactive opportunities to get more information from our experts. But then you can also get behind the paywall with a premium membership or a gold level membership and get even more information from PDN. personaldefensenetwork.com. Go check it out after this podcast. On this podcast today, we are going to talk about armed home defense. Now, I have just kicked off the Personal Defense Network training tour for 2022, along with eight other instructors who are teaching all kinds of things all over the country. I today taught an armed home defense tactics class. Now, armed home defense really is a course that draws from a lot of other areas. Of course, we want to make sure that if you're talking about armed home defense with a pistol, you have basic defensive pistol shooting skills. Armed home defense with a rifle, same thing. We want to make sure that you have the basic understanding of the rifle use, how to employ the rifle, particularly in close quarters, around cover, around barricades, in the environment that you're likely to need to defend yourself in your home, the bedroom, the hallway, the stairwell. One of the things that's really important to understand is that very few people come to take my class that is specific like that, an armed home defense tactics class, if they have not already taken one of our fundamental classes. And that's how it was today. The day all of our students had previously trained in at least one day of defensive pistol, and some students had more understanding of our concepts, whether it was from other classes, books, or being a Personal Defense Network member. Once we got everybody together, the first thing we did today was go into the classroom. In the classroom at my Eastern headquarters, Ancient City Shooting Range, we have a whiteboard because every great classroom should have multiple whiteboards or at least one really big one, and even a mediocre classroom is going to have a whiteboard. A whiteboard is infinitely more important than just about anything else you could have. Of course, you could have a chalkboard, you could have a flip chart with a Sharpie, whatever it is you think you need to be able to draw and write on. And I think that's really the best way to present information to a student when you're an instructor that really knows what you're doing, is with a free flow kind of presentation, and the whiteboard lets me do that. First thing I draw on the whiteboard is the title of the class, Home Defense Tactics, and then I put a circle in the middle of the board, and I put AHD, and that stands for Armed Home Defense. And what I'm going to put around that circle are the five things that we're going to talk about right now. They are the basic strategies and tactics of armed home defense. And it's important to understand that they do not specifically go in order. You activate the right strategy, you employ the right technique, when appropriate, based on what's happening to you. But we do talk about them in a specific order because I find it easier for the students to understand the concepts and then be better prepared to practice applying them when we go to the range, when we get into maybe a scenario house, any force-on-force training, or when they go home to explain these concepts to their family, or maybe just put them in the practice themselves with some simulations, some drills, and maybe even some full-on scenario training at some point. So what do we mean when we say armed home defense? Well, the armed part should be obvious. When it comes to home defense, do we have to define that? Sometimes we do. Why? Because honestly, we're not talking about defending the home. We're talking about defending yourself or people you care about inside of your home. And we can even extend the armed home defense tactics class to any other area that you can control to some extent, that you can maybe even modify to some extent, and of course that you're going to know very well. And that's what your home is. Your workplace is also that to some extent. Any place, a vacation house, a family home, some place that you spend a lot of time. If you go to the same restaurant two or three times a week, you can get to know the area of the restaurant. Now, you may not be able to stage defensive tools there. You may not be able to change the locks or the doors, but you certainly could know that environment. And that's really what separates armed home defense from armed active shooter response, for example. You can employ a lot of the same strategies, but when you're not in the area that you control, you're at a disadvantage. You're applying them with a lot more chaos involved or more decision-making that has to happen. When you talk about defending yourself in your home, you know the layout, you know where the tools are going to be staged, and you can even change the environment. So what's the first thing that we're going to talk about when it comes to the strategies? Well, it's evasion. And it's personal defense rule number one, avoid conflict if you can. So most of the time when you're in your home, leaving the home is not going to be the right option. But sometimes it may be. If there's someone that's known to you, you know that they have a beef with you, a concern with you, they think you got them fired, they think you're sleeping with their spouse, whatever their anger is based on, if they're unreasonably showing up at your house to try to hurt you, and they're trying to make entry at the front door or the back door, the best thing you might be able to do is run out the back door and go to a neighbor's house, run out the front door, jump in your car while they're distracted by trying to break through your sliding glass door at the back of the house. You may have the opportunity to evade, and we define evasion as putting yourself into a position where the bad guy can't hurt you. It's much easier to think about doing this in the public space, an active spree killer, an active shooter, something like that, where you can actually leave the campus or leave the building. In your home, it's probably not going to be something that you put at the top of the list or even on the options list, and that's where we move to barricade. So while evasion means putting yourself in a position where you can't get hurt, to barricade means to make it harder for the bad guy to get into a position to hurt you. And that simply could mean hiding, right? Putting yourself in a position where the bad guy doesn't know where you are in the home, you're quiet, you're out of sight, the bad guy can't find you, the bad guy can't hurt you. Maybe it means going upstairs or around a corner. Maybe it means going behind a door and closing it and locking it, closing it, locking it, and pushing something in front of it so it can't be opened inward. There's a lot of different ways you can affect a barricade, and this is really one of the most important aspects in which armed home defense takes advantage of your opportunity to modify the environment. So one thing I'll recommend to everybody is if you are going to pick one room in your home as the barricade room, that hard point or strong point, when you think about what room you're going to use, immediately you need to think about the doors and the lock, or the door and the locks, or the hinges, all of the things that are important to the structure of that door. First of all, you want an exterior class door. It doesn't matter whether it's metal, solid wood, or fiberglass. You want to make sure you have a solid, or even vinyl, a solid door that's designed for the exterior of a home. Put that on the room that you're going to barricade in. You also want to make sure that that door is attached to the structure of the home very well. And that means not the little pop metal 1-inch or 1 1/4-inch screws that usually come with the doors to connect the frame to the wall or the door to the frame through the hinges, but you want to make sure you have good heavy grade long screws. We're talking about 3-inch or longer screws that go all the way into the 2x4s or even through a metal frame around that door. You want to make sure that you're using good high grade metal screws, not just pop metal, and you want to make sure that you have a deadbolt on that door. So you want a solid deadbolt with a throw that goes at least a couple of inches past a good solid strike plate. And again, that strike plate needs to be connected to the studs, to the 2x4s, not just to the frame that came with the door from the store when you bought it, the pre-hung door. So you want to make sure that your barricade area is strong, and you want to stage your defensive tools there. And that's what we talk about, arming yourself. So when we get into the last three, arming, communicating, and responding, actually using the gun to defend yourself, these really become incredibly interchangeable, and your priority is going to be based on time and situation. So that's why it's important to picture this as that circle with armed home defense in the middle and these five areas of strategy or tactics around them. So we have evade, we have barricade, and we have arming yourself. To arm yourself means to obtain your defensive tool and prepare it for use. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, I carry my gun whenever I'm home. Well, I find a lot of people who say that, it's very hard to practice that in reality, right? Obviously, you're probably not carrying a gun when you're in the shower. You're probably not wearing a gun when you're sleeping. So is the gun close by? And if so, is it secured from unauthorized use, right? Especially if you have kids in the house. We're talking about a quick access safe with push buttons, with a code, maybe a biometric or maybe an RFID that only you know how to open that and your kids do not. Visitors won't, the maid won't, the plumber won't be able to figure it out. So sometimes hiding a gun in a secure home where there's everyone in the home is authorized to use the gun and capable of using the gun, that may be fine. For most of us, we're going to secure the gun, especially when we're traveling or when we're at our workplace. We're going to make sure we have that gun in a quick access safe. So when you get the gun out of the quick access safe, is it loaded with a magazine inserted? Is it loaded and chambered with a round in the chamber? If so, if it's loaded and chambered, strongly recommend that you have it in a holster, or at least with a trigger guard inside of that quick access safe. That way, when you reach into it, you're not likely to set the gun off. What else should be there in your barricade area, along with arming yourself with your defensive tool? You want to think about having a phone, a communications device, even a phone that's off contract can make a 911 call. If it's a smartphone, it can tie into your camera system that you can see the cameras from outside of your barricade room when you're in there. That can be incredibly important, or at least incredibly helpful. You want to make sure there's medical equipment there, maybe body armor, things like that. You want to think about a light source, flashlight, light sticks. All these things can be in your barricade area. When we think about tying them to where your defensive tool is staged, where you can arm yourself first and foremost. Then we also want to talk about communication. And here I'm going to give you a homework assignment. I want you to go to personaldefensenetwork.com and take a look at communications. You're also going to want to look at the three C's of team operations, or the three C's of teamwork in a tactical environment. And you're going to see how communication is one of those C's and the role that it plays. What are you going to look for? I want you to look for not only how to communicate with your family members when and if you need to, what to say, and maybe more importantly, what you don't need to say, but I also want you to look at how to communicate with the emergency responders. When you call the emergency response number, the 911, you call the dispatcher, the emergency operator, there are five specific things I want you to talk about. They are explained in detail in a couple of different pieces of content at personaldefensenetwork.com, including our distance education class, which you can take through PDN Academy. That's your homework assignment. Go think about communication with the 911 operator. What are the five things you need to say? Also, how do you communicate with your family? And the last one, what I'm going to talk about in a little more detail here, is communications with the threat. Should you call out and say, I've got a gun and I'll use it if I need to, or something like that? I say generally, you need to remember, hiding is part of barricading. If the bad guy doesn't know where you are and you call out, you may let them know where you are. Think about it. If you're the person that's listening to this podcast, if you're a member of PDN, if you go out and train and practice and take classes, someone who is known to you, and believe it or not, that's where most interpersonal violence happens. It's someone who's known to you prior to the attack. If they know you have a gun, they know you train, well, they may have shown up to your house fully prepared to deal with the fact that you have a gun. So merely calling out and saying you have a gun may not deter them at all. Let's also think about a property crime criminal, someone who's there just to burglarize your home. He may not even think you're there. He may be looking for the silverware or your hidden cache of jewels. If you call out and cause him to panic and think, oh my gosh, if I get caught, I'm going back to jail forever, you may actually create an escalation of force. You may cause them to panic and attack out of fear that they had no intention of doing. And if you would have just stayed in the room and used 911 text or even a quiet 911 call, the police could have shown up and dealt with the problem. You never would have had the confrontation. On the other hand, if contact is imminent, picture the movie The Shining. You've got Jack Nicholson, you know, clawing at the door with an axe, pushing through, peeking through, making eye contact with you with the axe in his hand saying, I see you, I'm coming to get you. Now there's no harm in reminding him, hey, I've got a gun, I will use it. And putting that out there and hoping that maybe you get a psychological effect. Maybe you deter that person, right? Because that's conflict avoidance. That's the number one thing. And then de-escalation, using the gun to say, hey, I will defend myself, letting the person know that may cause them to change their behavior. But again, I think you have to understand the gray area does exist. But for the most part, if contact is not imminent, you don't need to create contact. You're better off barricaded and hidden, calling the police, letting them respond, and then hoping that you never have to get into that direct confrontation. So when you defend, when you're going to announce that you could defend yourself, you're prepared to defend yourself, that's something you need to figure out ahead of time. You want to think about what trigger points, if the person gets to the top of the stairs, if they start pounding on the door, if they come down a certain hallway, if they're about to round a certain corner, that's when you're going to call out and let them know you are prepared and willing to defend yourself. Obviously, that can also have a positive factor. If you have made your 911 call, you leave the phone on, it's on speaker, or even without being on speaker, that phone call is also going to be recorded. There's going to be a recording that you gave this person, you know, more than fair warning, hey, keep going down this road and I will respond with my lethal defensive tool. And then the last piece is the response with that lethal defensive tool. That's the fight. That's when you shoot. That's the end of armed home defense. At that point, you are using the gun appropriately when you need to defend yourself or others inside of this space that you controlled. Maybe you had time to try to evade. Maybe you ended up barricading. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you fell asleep on the couch. Bad guy kicked the door in. You were wearing your gun. First thing you know, there's a bad guy 15 feet away with a knife. You go immediately to the response with the firearm. And that's something that you can practice at the range. Of course, if you know your barricade area, you know where you're going to position yourself in that barricade area, then you can practice that exact distance, you know, at a high center chest size target. You can practice getting your gun out of a quick access safe at the range, put the target at the right distance, get the gun ready, drive out, engage that threat. And you also want to practice from what we call the staged position. That's another thing you can learn more about. And it's probably something we'll talk about in a future episode, the importance of practicing your movement, especially if it's involved moving with family or if you're in a public space and you're trying to evade when you're armed, the staged position, hand on the gun with the gun still in the holster. So there's your five basic strategies or tactics for armed home defense: evasion, barricade, arming yourself, communication, and of course, responding as necessary when it's appropriate with the gun itself, the actual fight. So there's a lot of overlap there with active shooter response as well, but the big advantage of understanding your home defense tactics is how much better prepared you can be in a space that you know very well and that you can control. And again, our training segment is brought to you by Personal Defense Network, and that's your homework assignment today. Go to personaldefensenetwork.com and learn more about how to communicate with the 911 operator and the three C's of team operations, and that includes operating with your family during that dynamic critical incident. The second portion of our segment here today, or the second segment, I should say, of our podcast today, is the politics gun rights segment. And that, as always, is brought to you by Second Amendment Organization, 2AO.org, where we really focus on exercising our rights responsibly and being an articulate and well-educated, well-informed gun rights advocate. And that's at the grassroots level. That means, you know, sure, can you call your politician? Is the way you vote important? Maybe you can do a news story. Maybe you can be on a panel discussion somewhere. But ultimately, it's the conversations you have at the coffee shop, at the proverbial water fountain in your workplace, at the gym, at your kids' school events, at the park, with your friends, with your family, at the dinner table, the conversations you have with people, that's where you do the real grassroots work of gun rights advocacy. And of course, the best way you can be a gun rights advocate is to be a responsible gun owner. The way you behave around guns, the way you talk about guns, and the way you talk about the politics of guns. And today, you know, we're going to have a little bit of a themed podcast today. We are going to segue right from the training into the politics, and we're going to talk about why we don't use a gun to defend property. All right, now this can be a touchy subject, and what we're talking about here is first and foremost, could versus should. I am not giving out legal advice here. I am giving out my advice as someone who teaches armed defense, somebody that's interested in your physical safety, your ability to protect your family, and protecting your gun rights and my gun rights in the way you use firearms to protect yourselves and others. And I'm going to tell you that I think you should not plan, regardless of what the law says in your particular jurisdiction, you should not plan on using a gun to defend your property. Now, there's some gray area here. Somebody's going to come up with some scenario. Well, gee, Rob, what if I have a medicine that my mom needs to survive in my truck, and it's out in front of my house, and somebody's trying to steal my truck? Well, if you feel compelled to, you know, leave, you have, maybe obviously it was an accident, you left this incredibly important, vital, life-saving medicine in the vehicle, and now someone's trying to steal your truck, if you're using a firearm to stop them, you're not protecting the truck. You're not even protecting the medicine. In this case, you are, in fact, protecting your mom's life because you're trying to protect that person from stealing the medicine that apparently you can't just go get another prescription filled at the pharmacy. It's incredibly important. It's vital. It's urgent. I get it. If your kid is in the back of the car and you're about to have your kids kidnapped while someone's trying to steal your car, maybe it's a carjacking, kid's asleep in the back seat, somebody comes up to your window, smashes the window, they've got a knife, they've got a gun, they're telling you to get out of the car, they're going to take it. Well, now using your gun to defend the kids who are asleep in the back of the car is very different from just using your gun to stop the carjacking. Now, this is the reason you have car insurance. If we talk about your home, we talk about your belongings. You, again, armed home defense. You're not really defending the home. You're defending the people in the home, to include yourself. The idea of castle doctrine or stand your ground law, this is not what we're talking about. These are affirmative defenses to an appropriate and justified use of force to protect yourself or others. You should not be using the law as your justification for what the law says. I can shoot someone because they're stealing my computer, or because they're crossing the threshold of my home and I perceive a threat, or because they're stealing my car after dark in this town or in this state. That's legal for me to shoot them. I think that is a negligent use of the firearm. I don't think you should be using lethal force to stop a property crime. Again, it's not about vigilantism. It's not about true justice. It's about protection and protection of life, or protecting yourself or others from serious bodily injury, from rape, from being maimed, from being disabled, or from being killed. That's when I think you should be thinking about using these guns. So you have to tell yourself ahead of time, in what I refer to as a sober moment, a moment of clarity, a moment that isn't clouded by emotion, you have to tell yourself, I'm not going to react to my car alarm going off at 3 o'clock in the morning by getting my gun and running out on the porch. I'm not going to stick my head out the window. If I see my car being stolen and being backed out of the driveway and the guy's, you know, spinning the tires to get away, I'm not going to fire a bunch of rounds at my own vehicle out in the street while it's moving and risk missing and hitting somebody across the street, or ricocheting off the sheet metal of my car, or hitting the ground and skipping around into a neighbor's house. You know, people have been killed because of that kind of reckless action. And it doesn't matter to me that the law says you quote unquote can, because honestly, I don't believe the law says that. I don't believe the law says you can be negligent and reckless with your firearm. Now, in a controlled situation, you might also be able to legally point and say, nope, I am allowed to go out on my porch and point a gun at a guy who's trying to break into my car and say, I will shoot you if you keep trying to steal my car. Do I think you should? Absolutely not. I think you grab your keys, you set off the alarm with your panic button, you turn on your porch lights, but you don't turn on your porch lights with you standing under them, where the guy may again panic and you've escalated a property crime to a personal crime, and now you may get shot. You know, you think, well, I've got the drop on him, Rob, and I've got my AR and I'm ready to go. But maybe you don't know that his getaway driver parked at the corner of your yard that you didn't even notice also has a gun. And now he's shooting at you. And, you know, God forbid, worst case scenario, you got your family there. They hear the noise. They hear the ruckus. They come running down the stairs or stick their head out the window to see what's going on. You've caused a lethal confrontation. Bullets start flying at your house. And imagine one of your family members catching one of those bullets. You know, I get it. We can talk about, you don't think you're going to miss. You don't think the bullet's going to skip. You don't think the bullet's going to be deflected into your neighbor's house. But what if one of those bad guys fires around into your house and ricochets through the glass or gets a lucky shot through the drywall and hurts one of your family members, kills one of your family members? Let the car get stolen. And again, if you're upstairs with your family member and you're barricaded and you're in a safe place and you've got your family behind you and 911's been called, the police are on the way, the gun's in the hand, you've got the body armor on, or you've draped the ballistic blanket over your kids, and the guy's downstairs tearing your house up, that's what you have homeowners insurance for. You don't need to put brains all around your living room, traumatize your kids, deal with the emotional, social, financial, potentially criminal, and civil court aftermath of using your gun in a defensive situation to protect your DVD, to protect your wall-hanging art, to protect your couch, to protect your $50,000 in cash you have in the cushions of your couch. I don't care what it is. It's not worth all that aftermath. And the idea that, oh, gee, Rob, you're encouraging bad guy behavior. Nope, I'm not encouraging bad guy behavior. I'm worried about you. I'm worried about you, the listener to the Rob Pincus podcast. I'm worried about you, my student of armed defense. I want you to be better off in the long run. And I firmly believe you're going to be better off in the long run not causing a confrontation that you don't need to and not shooting somebody that you didn't really need to. Remember, that's the basis of armed defense. It's using a firearm to protect yourself or others when you need to, not when the law, quote unquote, says you can. So I want you to ponder that. I want you to think about that. And if you want more information, again, Second Amendment organization has a lot of information about responsible gun right use and exercising your rights responsibly. But again, I'm going to circle back, even though it's the tactics segment was over and we're now into the politics segment, the gun rights segment, I'm still going to refer you back to Personal Defense Network, where we talk about should versus could. Or go to any of your search engines and put my name in there, Rob Pincus, should versus could. You'll get some more insight into this. And you know, this may be one of the more controversial topics that I've tackled here at the Rob Pincus podcast. So let me know what you think. Put your thoughts in the comment section. Share this to your social media and maybe poll your friends, poll some other people. See what they think. If you have another instructor in the game of armed defense and you want to see what they think, share this with them, get their opinion. Maybe they completely disagree with me and I'd be interested in hearing why they think it's a good practice to think about using your guns, your lethal force, to protect property and property alone. Because that's someplace that I'm willing to disagree. But as always, I don't want to agree to disagree. I want to understand and then be able to explain where those differences are, even if I'm trying to explain the other person's position. And that other person might be you, the listener of the Rob Pincus podcast. And I appreciate you being a listener. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to share. Obviously, if you do agree with me here, you think all these points are brilliant, well, then you're almost irresponsible for not sharing the show. So do that. Click share, copy the link, put it on your social media, put it in the Twitter, put it in the Facebook, put it on Instagram, put it in your story, put it on your TikTok, put it in the truth, wherever it is you share information, you exchange information with other people, robpincuspodcast.com belongs there as well. Thanks for listening. Once again, personaldefensenetwork.com and Second Amendment Organization are our sponsors. Thanks.